Hello and welcome to another episode of the CG Garage. This is episode number 315 featuring the amazing Ash Thorpe. It was so cool to have Ash on. I've been wanting to have Ash on for several years, just never were able to get our schedules to match up. And he's down in the San Diego area. And so we were always trying to figure out if I should just go down there. And then finally, when this whole thing, Kristen and I were doing this remotely, I was like, let's just ask Ash to be on. And lo and behold, he's been on. And it was so cool to talk to Ash, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah. It's like, if you need something inspiring to listen to, listen to this. It's going to make you happy. And like, I loved it. I was like smiling when the podcast ended. I was like, that was so good. Yeah, he's like humble, and like I like how he like attributes like his success like on his podcast to his wife. Like, yeah, it was really nice. Yeah, that was so sweet. And then just invaluable information, and he's worked on like Ghost in the Shell, Ender's Game, Captain Marvel. So, You know, got some real cool things to listen to in there.
Yeah, absolutely. He is indeed a very, very humble person. And that says a lot considering how successful and how well-renowned he is. I also was really sort of inspired by how he's sort of been saying, you know, he's been struggling with part of his, you know, I want to call it, you know, he's been trying to get out of the limelight a little bit, because he has been in the limelight for a while. And that's sort of an interesting thing, and his struggle with, you know, he and I talked for another 45 minutes after the podcast. So I don't know which part of it was in the podcast and which one was just he and I chatting. But, you know, he's been struggling a little bit with social media posts and pressures in that area, and a lot of things that I think is really great to hear. I think we all need to hear that, especially as artists, you know, that what we need to do to keep what's important to us and our creativity. And he is definitely a very creative person and a really cool guy to have on the podcast. So thank you, Ash, finally for being on, for finally making this work. It was really great to have him on, and hopefully we'll have many more conversations with him in the future, because it was really cool. All right, we have some big announcements coming on. What's going on, Kristen?
All right, you can find these out at chaosgroup.com/events. Like Chris said, we have a big announcement coming up tomorrow. So
February, for those who are listening a little late, is February 23rd is when the announcement comes out. So if you're, watch out for it. And it's going to be 6 o'clock Bulgaria, 6 p.m. Bulgaria time, which will be 8 a.m. LA time. And you can figure out your own time zones if you need to. But it's a big, cool thing. And Peter, our CEO, has a big announcement, and he's going to be giving a speech about that. So very exciting, right?
Yes, very exciting.
Cool. And then we have one more.
Yes. On February 25th, it's called Real-Time Visualization with V-Ray. This is a webinar, and it will tell you more about the real-time visualization possibilities of V-Ray Vision in Chaos Vantage. So, yeah, be fun.
Perfect. And then we have another thing I want to talk about is we're coming up soon. March 1st is the deadline for the Building Utopia competition, as some of you guys know. Building Utopia is our competition that we set up as part of an initiative of releasing Vantage. Vantage is our real-time ray tracer standalone package, and you can do a lot of really cool stuff with it. So we put out a competition to see what cool stuff you could do with it. If you want to know more about it, go to buildingutopia.cgarchitect.com. That is where it's being hosted, and it's being sponsored by our good friends at Lenovo and NVIDIA and Kitbash 3D and CG Architect and ourselves. And lots of great prizes, some very nice prizes. So definitely worth a look. So remember, March 1st is a deadline. It won't take you too long to do a competition if you guys are using Vantage, because Vantage is pretty quick. So give it a chance and check it out. We'll look forward to seeing what you guys do. buildingutopia.cgarchitect.com. And I think that's the only news we have for now. But remember, February 23rd is a big announcement. So there's lots of stuff being announced at that point. It's a big surprise. If people want to know more about the podcast, where can they go, Kristen?
You can go to facebook.com/CG Garage Podcast or chaosgroup.com/CG Garage.
Perfect. And if you have any other ideas for the podcast, we would love to hear from you. labs@chaosgroup.com is our address. And of course, remember that these podcasts are also in video form. So if you want to see Kristen and I talking before and put faces to our voices, you're always welcome to do that. We're available on YouTube. It's at Chaos Group TV is our channel. So all of our video podcasts are there. Or you can just follow us on Facebook. We put all our video podcasts there as well. facebook.com/CGUKiraj podcast. I think I've covered everything. God, we've gotten good at this, Kristen, right? All right. That being said, please enjoy this awesome podcast with Ash Thorpe.
Welcome to another CG Garage, where the chaos group talks. You'll know it's over when the last bucket drops. We're gonna fire off rays in high dynamic range. We know that ambient occlusion is passe. Global illumination won't lead you astray. And while image-based lighting is really swell, you need to make sure everything has Fresnel.
Audio is something that's hard to fix.
Yeah, it's one of the things that's not forgiving, you know? Like, I remember there was this director, he did a Vimeo breakdown on like his directing, Somberg or something. He did a lot of those horror movies.
Uh-huh.
But he said that visuals, people are forgiving, but audio, people are not. So yep. If your audio is bad at all, people like are instantly like turned off by it. But you could watch like a kind of a fuzzy screen or something. So it's kind of interesting.
It's true.
How important audio is actually. And it's often overlooked, which is really weird. So.
Yeah, it's true. I was trying to do some short films, which I'm going to get into with you, by the way. But I was trying to do some short films and a buddy of mine who you know, has been on set, he's been a dolly grip for like, you know, Eastwood and all those guys. And he's done a bunch of shorts as well. And he said, take whatever budget you have and, you know, obviously it's going to be very small or whatever, and whatever money you have, just put it into audio because the rest you can manage or you can, you know, a crappy camera you can fix, you can treat it, you can do whatever. But if the audio is, if you don't have all those levels and all that game, you know, you're done. You're not going to be able to get that back.
It's really good words. And it's also something that it's good to hear and reinforce because oftentimes I'm like, oh yeah, like sound guy is the last thing I would think of, but actually having a good sound technician on location, getting what you need is really important. Yeah.
Yep. And then you don't have to worry about it.
That's the key. Yeah.
Yeah.
The less thing you have to worry about, the better.
Absolutely. Yeah. So yeah. Listen, Ash, you know, obviously it's nice to finally meet. We've been chatting here and there for a few years, but we haven't actually talked to each other in person. But your history is well known amongst a lot of people, but on my podcast, I actually have a kind of people all over the place, from architects to this and that. So they may not know necessarily everything about you, but I think it'd be really great to sort of go back and find out sort of what were some of the things that got you to where you are, what were things that inspired you as a kid and your education, and how did that sort of, you know, propel you to what you do?
Oh man. It's quite a journey.
Yeah.
I mean, to those of you that don't know who I am, I really have a personal hard time, like locking down exactly what I do because I really love so many things and I don't like to put myself in a box. But I'm known mostly as like for my directing stuff and CGI work and design and that kind of stuff. So, but I try not to put myself in a box, if that makes sense.
Sure.
But mostly director, creative director, art director, designer, CG artist, illustrator, all those things.
Yeah.
Most of it came from just growing up really, really, really poor, raised by a single mom and not having much other than like paper and pen and imagination. So, and grew up in all over the place, but big part of my childhood was in Hawaii. So like just being out in nature and exploring my imagination and stuff. And, you know, one thing went to another and I just kind of put my, my love of my art forward and just, you know, every year you slowly progress, you slowly get better, you learn a new program, you acquire new skills, you learn from other people. And then now I'm 37 and I'm still just chipping away at this. My friends and I, we call it the Conan wheel of pain. It's just, you kind of continually go on that cycle of wheel of pain. So yeah, constantly growing. So, but yeah, I mean,
for sure.
There's more to this journey, I'm sure. But
would you consider yourself like pretty much 100% self-taught in terms of everything you've done, or?
I went to college. I got an associate's degree at a local college here. Again, money is a big factor in my journey because I didn't really have much and still don't have a ton. So, so that dictates your outcome and where you go in life. So I got a college degree, But to be completely honest, and in all respect to all my educators, I had some really good teachers and some great people that were really amazing to me. But, you know, education, especially with art, it all comes from your incentive to like be curious and want to, you know, find answers in your own personal answers. And that then turns into your taste and your sensibilities and stuff. So I'd say, I don't know, I would consider myself very much self-taught. Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Which makes sense. And you know, just someone who sort of browses your work and goes through your work, that is something that I think you are still doing. You're still teaching yourself things every day and you're looking at things differently every day. There's still a lot of exploration that's happening within you. So it seems to me that, and your style is not stagnant, shall we say, constantly evolving.
Yeah.
So it's definitely interesting to see that, and it totally makes sense to do that. What was your motivation, you know, besides obviously, you know, growing up, you know, with lesser means, but what were some of the motivations that sort of inspired you creatively speaking?
You know, I don't know if I chose art or art chose me, to be honest.
Okay.
I think it's almost like I already had my book written for my life, if that makes sense. And every day I'm just discovering a little bit about the book that's already been written. So motivation just kind of innately comes through me. My art is who I am and what I am, and everything that my essence is mainly when I'm doing art, or the act of art creation is really me. So the motivation just kind of comes from me just existing, if that makes sense. It's probably somewhat poetic and some people are rolling their eyes, I imagine, but it's true. That's the only way I can really explain it. It's just, it is everything that, it's just who I am.
Right.
Yeah.
So what, you know, that makes sense. But what was, you know, obviously you knew you had to create, you were making things, you were evolving things. What was one of the breakthroughs that sort of allowed you to think like, well, maybe this is something that I do as a career that I can actually, you know, live off of and do that, in that way?
I think I remember there a long time ago when I was growing up, I was really into comics, and there was this magazine called Wizard Magazine.
Uh-huh.
And it was kind of like a synopsis of all the comic books that were out and stuff. And they would do these like artist entries, or they would do like artist interviews and stuff. And when I was reading these interviews, I was like, oh, like it made the person behind the comic like a real person. Then it started, I identified like, oh, there's an artist and there's an inker and then all these things. So I started to, as a young child, like kind of compartmentalize these different aspects of the art creation, and that people actually made a living off of doing these things. And originally I really wanted to be a comic book artist, but unfortunately right when I came at the age to actually be able to do that, the comic book industry collapsed in on itself, like the movie industry, due to oversaturation and just the marketplace itself kind of folding in on itself, unfortunately. So that wasn't a means to actually provide for a life, unfortunately, right, at that time. So, but yeah, so I don't know if I guess that's maybe answering the question, but that was kind of like one of the first impetus where I was like, started to identify that there was people behind this,
right,
stuff, and this is what they did, and there was professions behind that.
And so
and then I might be able to fulfill that.
So the comic book industry obviously is very influential as a child, because if you love art, I mean, that is an immediate way of diving into that area, right? Because comics have that,
yeah,
that an ability, and also provide imagination and, you know, inspiration and excitement. And you can't wait to get the next one next week, go to the comic store. But
totally.
But what, yeah, but, you know, you said, okay, so suddenly you discovered that there's a person behind that comic book. There's a person that created that. There's an idea that came from someone's head that created that comic book. And that's really great. So did that inspire you to make your own story, your own narrative? You know, obviously you said the comic book industry kind of collapsed on itself, but there must have been something that got you into the entertainment industry or something of that nature. Mm.
I was always, I would read comics and then I would draw them.
Yeah.
I would plagiarize, or I would make my own, and I'd create my own characters and then I'd draw them. And I was always the guy in school that was like the art kid, and everybody would be like, oh, Ash can draw this cool stuff. And then I'd be like, that's kind of like how I kind of got my in with everybody in school. It's just, I was the art kid.
Mm-hmm.
My intro to the industry, it's a little bit of a story if you want to hear it. And I've told it before. I call it the year of pure potential. And so I took 3 months and I had a part-time or a full-time job as a designer, like an action sports company. Mm-hmm. So every time I'd come home and I would basically start building a portfolio, I'd look at all the work out there and I'd look at all the studios and I'd go like, I really want to do this thing. So I just manifested a portfolio that I would hope would like capture the attention of somebody that was looking for talent to hire at one of these studios. So 3 months, every night and weekend that I could, I said no to everything and I just kind of worked really hard and put all my time into it. I built a portfolio, sent it out to hundreds of studios, and I got reply from two, and only one of them was serious, and it was a company called Prologue. Mm-hmm. Prologue is run by Kyle Cooper. Kyle Cooper's a genius, mm-hmm. and he's one of the best. He's one of the best of all times, basically.
Yeah. For those who don't know, I mean, mostly known for incredible graphic design and motion graphics, mm-hmm. and ideas. Yeah.
And mostly title sequences. Yep. Famously known for doing like the 7 title sequence, which was kind of like reinvigorated yep. title sequences in films and all that kind of stuff. So they reached back out and said, hey, we're looking for a designer and illustrator to help us, a junior designer illustrator. I said, okay, that's great. I went up and interviewed. They loved me. I loved them. It was awesome. Mm-hmm. And then they said, okay, well, we want to hire you. I said, well, this is the problem. I live in San Diego and you guys are in LA. How are we going to do this? They said, that's not our problem, but we want to hire you. So I said, I had to talk to my newlywed wife at the time. And I said, look, I have to do this. This is very important. I must pursue this. Mm-hmm. My whole life up until then, I felt like I was somewhat of a failure. I didn't reach my potential. I wasn't able to really claim the dreams that I had, which was working in films and all that kind
and
of
how
stuff.
And how old were you about at this time?
That was like, I'm probably like mid-20s, so like 25, 26 or so around that time. I'm 37 now. So that was like 11 years. My wife and I have been together 12 years. So 11 years married.
Okay.
No, 10 years. I'm bad with numbers. Sorry. So
gives me a ballpark.
But yeah, exactly. It was a while ago. It was a long while ago. Yeah. This was back like when they were doing Iron Man 2, I think, with all that stuff in there. I came in right during that time. It was really cool. So I said, okay, give me a minute. I told Pearl, I said, give me a minute. Don't give the job to anybody else. I really need to just talk to my wife because this is a big deal. Sorry, sure. I didn't mean to swear.
No, that's fine.
So I speak to my wife, and then it was a tough call because we were newly married. We had our child, and it was like, hey, we just got married, and now you're going to be gone. Like, and I said, I know, I apologize. And I said, just give me a year. Let me just do this for a year. So I figure out this whole mechanism. My close friend Nate, he actually works next to the train station, so I worked out this whole thing. So here's my daily. For a whole year, this is what I did every day. I'd wake up at like 6 o'clock, get ready. My buddy Nate would pick me up at 6:30 and take me out to his work, which is right next to the train station in Oceanside, this little city in San Diego. Yep. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, great. So I'd get on the train there and hopefully no delays. Unfortunately, a lot of people would commit suicide or there would be like train issues and stuff. And so trains would get delayed all the time.
Right.
So it takes at least 2 hours to get to the Grand Central Station or the Union Station in the center of LA. And anybody who knows anything about LA, you know, it's impossible to get anywhere at any time, at all times. It's just the worst city for travel at all, forever and indefinitely.
It's much better now since the pandemic.
You know, I was actually considering going out there and driving around when pandemic just hit. Cause I was like, finally I could actually drive around and have some redemption.
But I go fishing in the morning sometimes and I live in Burbank and it's like 30 minutes to get to the beach. It's like, this is amazing. Oh,
that's insane. Yeah. That's never happened before.
Ever.
So yeah, just soak it up while you can.
Yep.
Yeah. Pandemic's done a couple good things for us. traffic removal has been great. But so I'd get to Union Station and I had a car there. I had a car that I parked there in the garage. So I'd take my car and I'd go on the 10. I'd take the 10 out to Venice, which is where Prologue was. Mm-hmm. So 2 hours, 45 minutes or so to 3 hours to get there.
Yeah.
I'd get to work at like 9:45, 10 o'clock.
Yeah.
And I would just grind. And Prologue's great. Like, you know, it's like a studio at the time that I remember. It was just really, it's just top tier talent, some of the most incredible artists and creatives and designers there ever. I felt like I was in a place where I was completely just dominated, which was awesome. I embrace the challenge of things. Like if I see a mountain, I'm like, oh, it's not that bad. I'm just going to climb it. You know, I think after the act, you know, so I'm there and it was just, it was incredible. I learned so much and I threw myself at everything I could and bless everybody there for putting up with me at that time. Cause I was just like this young idiot just asking to help with everybody. And so, but yeah, the perspective now. And then they would serve us dinner, which was great too. Cause like if you work a lot of hours there, because it's a lot of work and it's intense and all, you know, it's like either like a lot of people can complain like, oh, it's bad or this and that. Like, yo, like it's a choice, man. You don't have to do this line of work. It's not for everybody. It's intense and it's not an easy thing. And it claims a lot of people too. So, but anyways, I'd work until about 9 there.
Mm-hmm.
And then I would, jump in my car, race over to the Union Station, park my car in the garage, get on the 10 o'clock train down south, take the 10, hopefully nothing happens, get to the train station around 12:30. My wife would pick me up. She would pack our daughter up into the car, pick me up at the train station in Oceanside at like 12:30. And Oceanside's ultra sketch. There's like crackheads and like homeless people everywhere all the time. So I was like, oh, this is great. Get home. Debrief my wife, tell her about the day. She was so awesome and supporting that and being a part of it. And then we would go home, take a shower, sleep for a couple hours, and then get back and do it again. So that was a year. And sometimes I would just stay up there. They had a couch. I would just sleep up at the couch sometimes if there was like heavy deadlines or whatever. And then I'd sleep at my buddy Alistair's house on his couch too. Just a lot of sofa surfing, basically.
So. Right.
Yeah. But that was my only way to make it in. And the only reason if people were asking, like, why don't you just move to LA? First, I don't really like LA. And then second, because I spent a lot of time, my brother used to live there. And I just, some cities click with you, some they don't.
Right.
And LA just never really, I know a lot of people that love it. So I'm not going to say anything bad. But my daughter, my wife had split custody. So we couldn't live, we couldn't move too far away based on her agreements with her ex-husband and stuff. Right. So it was basically, we were stuck there. So it's like, got to keep the family together, but at the same time I'm gone. It was a lot to learn.
Sure.
I instantly became called the year of pure potential. I became, I went from a young boy to a man through that journey. It was painful for everybody involved, but it was, I built a portfolio from there and then since then I've been basically freelancing. So,
okay. Yeah. So you did it. You were a prologue for a year, and that was a good time to be a prologue too. I mean, that was like in their prime, right?
Prime time.
Yeah.
Prime time. Yeah.
So that was
everything was just popping.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And I know that office in Venice. It was kind of a cool office too. It was pretty.
Oh, you've been there?
Yeah. It was great.
Awesome.
It was great. My buddy Dan Thron worked there for a little bit, and a couple other people.
Dan. Yeah. Like I said, it's intense.
Right.
And, you know, I have a lot of respect for Kyle and Kim. Kim's the one that actually hired me. She saw that I could draw and she wanted to give Kyle somebody that could draw to take his wild ideas and manifest them to clients and stuff too. So, but, he's like, Kyle was a mentor of mine, Kim and Danny Yant and all those people, Ilya, Paul Mitchell. I mean, there are so many talented people there.
Absolutely.
So, and in the prime at the time, it was just like there was no other studio in my mind that I should be there at. It's just, you're just around killers left and right, just supreme talent from around the world, all collectively in a like melting pot of like pure potential. So,
right.
Yeah.
Well, it's definitely the place to cut your teeth. That's for sure. So,
yeah.
You decided it's, you know, after a year, you felt invigorated enough to go freelance and to go by on your own.
Not really, but that was the deal with my wife.
Okay. So
I could have used another 8 to 12 months for sure.
Okay.
Just to keep me even stronger. And on one of the things too with that studio and most studios at the time too, everything was compartmentalized. So you weren't like a designer animator like you'd say necessarily be now or like a generalist. It was more like specialist, you know? So when I came out of there, I was like, okay, I'm really good at doing I'm good at doing boards or concepts and ideas, but I don't know how to animate and all these other tools.
Right.
So I had to acquire those things, like, because back in the day it was more or less like everybody was specialized, you know, so Whereas I feel like everything's kind of spread out now more than ever, generalized basically.
I mean, do you feel like, because I know in visual effects world now, there's actually, you know, it used to be a generalist was a dirty word for a while. And then now it's much more accepting. In fact, there's generalists who do great, great stuff, and it's been much more accepted. And in fact, you know, more, it's better because you can do a lot more things. Do you think that that's the same case for motion graphics and graphic design, or?
I think it's just good if you have knowledge. I don't care what it is. You can be a generalist, like, you know, I always feared be a master of none or a jack of all trades or whatever, that kind of stuff. Like, I don't know. I always kind of feared that growing up, but the older I get, the more I open my mind to everything and I try to just learn everything, the more I realize the strength really comes from having an open mind and educating yourself as much as possible. Mm-hmm. It's not always easy to do, but that's kind of the thing. I think that really helps too. So I don't really have a complete answer for that because I think it's so per case situation, you know? Yep. So, because if you're hired to do something, but you only halfway know it, it's kind of difficult to really fulfill your obligations, you know, and be that piece of the puzzle. So for production, whatever it is.
Absolutely. You know? Absolutely. Well, that makes perfect sense, for sure. So you know, you had to deal with your wife and you finished after a year and fulfilled your bargain exactly the way you said you would. But you went freelance and you were able to, you know, obviously with that training and that portfolio that's now grown through Prologue, you're able to get more freelance work at this point, right?
That's correct. Yeah. Thankfully, and another shout out to Motionographer at the time too, because Motionographer was a website that was a really big, important part of motion graphics community and stuff. And I sent them my work because they would do like spotlights on portfolios and stuff. Mm-hmm. I sent them my work and I just told them, like, really summarized very quickly in a couple sentences, like, I just came off of your work of really intense work at Prologue and here's my portfolio and so on and so forth. And they wanted to know more about it. So they did this big article about it. It's called Your Pure Potential, where I explained my whole journey and it was very polarizing. People in the industry are like, ah, shit, the people that didn't want to put in the work or were afraid of that kind of effort or that I was in the industry doing what I was doing were very kind of somewhat offended or thought it was gross that I was working so hard and like, where's the work-life balance? And then those that were for it were like, this is awesome. This guy's living the American dream. He's just doing it. And you know, I'm not letting anybody get in the way of that. So, but that article was the first, that once that happened, then my freelance career just blossomed. And then I've never had to look for work since. I just keep grinding away and then sharing it
In fact, I would say that it was just 1 year, and so therefore, worth it, right?
That's it. Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's. I think I probably work way more even now.
Yeah.
It just gets more compounded, you know, and things are shifted and priorities are shifted. But yeah, yeah. But that's kind of, those are the two big things: Kimberly and Kyle hiring me at Prologue, and then me working underneath those amazing, talented people. And then going freelance, but the freelance got launched out really perfect timing because Motionographers like basically said, like, this is this guy, look at, he's like new at the game, but look at his art and he's doing this thing and he's got a voice and he really cares about what he does.
Right.
And I think clients were like, oh shoot, let's hire Ash to see what he could do.
Right.
And I always, I try to just for every project under promise, over deliver and hit everything on time and be good at communicating and check my ego and get out of the way of it and just kind of work, you know, just grind away until the projects are done. So
that's awesome. Yeah. That's awesome. So, but you also started your own company as well, right? So you did that. So when did that happen?
Well, it mainly came about because there's a couple of legal issues. I wanted to keep myself one wall away from a lawsuit personally attacking me. So that was one of the things. Also tax purposes. And because the company basically is me and my wife. My wife's my producer. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of similar to how Kyle and Kim kind of run Prologue.
Right.
I think she's more of a producer side on things too. But we worked just from my house. Mm-hmm. And before COVID, we've been doing like quarantine for like 10 years because freelance. But we expand and contract based on the project.
Sure.
So like I'll have a big job with like say Apple or Nike or something. And then I'll go, oh shit, like, I need all these things. I have all these friends. This is the budget. I pay everybody what they're paid. And then we all team up, but we all do it remotely. So I've been doing this method and this kind of studio structure for like 8 years or so.
Right.
So it expands and contracts. Sometimes it's just me. I'm working on like a Marvel film where I'm just doing a bunch of concept art and it's just me doing it. And then I'll go off and do something else. It's like a bigger job or for a car company or something, you know? So yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's great. I mean, obviously that makes sense to start your own company and for liability purposes and all the other stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Taxes, corporate taxes, yep. All that kind of stuff, like things that people don't really want to talk about or care to talk about, but it's a part of it. It's there's money to be made in this industry. There's money to be saved. You want to avoid taxes. You need to have a higher accountant. If you don't have an amazing wife that reads all the details, you need a lawyer.
Yeah.
You know?
So yeah, no, those are good. Yeah. Those are good things, especially, you know, that's the thing, right? It's a lot of times, especially creative people, they get distracted by the fact of what they need to do for a business, and it's very important.
Totally.
Yeah.
Well, it's so taxing just to manifest what we do.
Right.
And to pull things out of the ether of the fifth dimension and like bring them forth to people to understand. It's like, it's an incredible amount of brain calculating cycles just to get that stuff out. So I totally understand it. And I'm so blessed and thankful that my wife is completely opposite minded. So she's like detail oriented, just like follows the rules and sticks to them. Like, and she knows how that all works. And I'm not, I don't read it. I'm like, whatever. Like, so if I didn't have her, I would have to have a really good attorney or lawyer or somebody that I trusted that was on like, you know, on the payroll basically.
Sure.
So, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. That makes sense. Yeah. I do.
My wife is a huge part of my success. I mean, she helped me become a man and like I became a father as all these things. It's like,
yeah,
so much of my existence and my art is due to her contribution to my life. So
that is wonderful. I have to say I have a very similar experience with my wife. So
awesome.
I can completely understand that. That's a wonderful.
What thing. A blessing.
It is. It is. Blessed. It's supportive. And yeah. It's also, you know, there's all those times, you know, when I get my own insecurities or whatever, and I'm like, I don't know if I can do this. And you're like, take stock of your life. You know, your wife is able to, it's like, this is all the thing. Here's your opportunity. You know, I'll give you a year to do that. You know, those type of things. And that's a wonderful thing. Absolutely. And those life partners are extremely important in the success of what you do.
Everything. Yeah. It's everything. Yeah.
That's wonderful. Yeah. Okay, so I do want to touch on a couple of things. And the first thing I want to touch on is the sheer amount of work that you do and the incredible stuff that you do. Obviously, you do a lot of work for you know actual customers and clients like Apple or Nike and title sequences and graphics. You know, you worked on Ender's Game. You were on Ender's Game, I think, when I was at DD. I wasn't actually on Ender's Game itself, but I remember you sort of working on some of those graphic stuff that was really cool at the time.
Classic. Yeah. That's awesome. Yeah, so, digital domain.
Yeah. So you've done a lot of great, great work, and we can get into some of that. But you've also done a lot of personal work and personal ideas and explorations and shorts and directed things and shown styles. Those are fabulous and always get great attention. First of all, one of the things that I love the most about them is how absolutely gorgeous they are and seemingly simple in a lot of ways. Like you take something that is like such a beautiful idea and you're like, I'm going to bring it down to like, you know, two colors and make that just express the entire story or do some of those things. You've done some incredible things that really sort of illustrate like, oh, when I see it, I say, I wish I had done that. Like, I'd wish I'd thought of that. It's like the idea is so great. And so if someone's out there and they want to create things, there's a lot of people, especially creators, that want to create things and they have that block. They don't know how to start. What's your motivation to start an idea, how to do something like that?
Well, first off, that's really kind of you. And thank you for the kind words. And I appreciate that. A lot of the distilling, I call it, comes from my design background, I think.
Okay.
And really admiring designers like Dieter Rams and designers who really are thinking people designers. They don't just make the thing because it's to be made. They make it because it's to be thought of and considered. And so I try to put a lot of thinking into that. When it comes to avoiding block, you know, I think a lot of it, I tried to touch on this a little bit in the beginning, but you asked me what my motivations and stuff are. It's simply because I feel like now more than ever in my life, I'm so much more aligned with what I should be doing. So motivation and block is literally obliterated. And I have a couple methodologies that I do that maybe could help with people that are kind of hitting that. One of the things is I'm very scatterbrained. So I kind of know my weaknesses. A lot of what I do comes from understanding who I am. I did a lot of time like reading books and understanding really who I am. A lot, I went through, you know, 25 some odd years not really knowing who I was. So when I started to discover like, oh, like I'm a scatterbrain, instead of going like, I should not be scatterbrained, I go, well, how can I use this to my strengths? How can I play to that? Is usually what it was is my soul or my whatever you want to call it was saying, hey, like you're this kind of person. You stay up late. You work weird hours. You'd like to do a lot of collaborations. You're not very good at communication and certain things, but you're really good at this thing, you know? So I kind of started playing to my strengths and falling into the habits that I felt were good. Mm-hmm. So motivation for these things, it kind of just comes naturally now because I'm not fighting it really. The only thing I'm fighting is this, like the programs to get like, because they're so freaking annoying, but communicating that is the next big hurdle that I'm trying to work through is understanding all the programs that I use to try and get those things out. But in regards to block and stuff, like there's, I jump basically. So it's very common for me to have four or five projects going at the same time. Mm-hmm. One really big one, many small ones. And then obviously client work is in the mix of that sometimes too. Some projects don't get worked on for weeks and then they get like, I'll get like a weekend and I'm like free and I just smash it out too. So, and most of the time it just comes from like collaborations and working with friends and stuff like that too. So, that's one of the things I do to avoid block because I noticed that when I would put all my eggs into one project on one basket, that's when the blocks started happening. That's when all the issues started happening. So I realized that if I divvy out the stress, so let's say, for example, I'm working on a project and I'm like, shit, I can't get through this wall, whatever it is, technically or whatever. And this is why I collaborate a lot because oftentimes my collaborator will give me a different perspective and then we'll problem solve together.
Yep.
So that's a huge mechanism. That's a big part of my success personally is working with other people that are better than me. So I will break through that barrier and it's just breaking through barriers basically. Mm-hmm. But if I'm doing it solo, it's like, it's tough. I hit the wall and I go, shit, okay, I'm not getting through this right now. I'm going to jump to another project. Sure. I'll jump to another project, work on that, and I'll come back. By the time I come back and I've thought about it, I have a solution or some way to get to the solution, if that makes sense. It's like, I think I learned it from reading about Einstein and his methodology, and he would work for hours on, you know, calculations and theories and theorems and all that kind of stuff. And the very like high level fifth dimension kind of thinking stuff. He'd go play the violin to break up his thinking patterns and then come back and reset it. And then I think the way that our brain works as a neural network, it kind of, our synapses are firing and stuff. And sometimes you get these random anomalies that will come that will spur a thought for solutions, you know? Mm-hmm. And I'm all about trying to reduce abstractions and find solutions, you know?
Okay.
And as soon as I see an abstraction, it's like, oh, it's time to attack that abstraction. What's the problem here? Distill it down and get to the solution, you know? So once you do, it's kind of like you identify the problem and then you solve the solution and go from there. So, but yeah, I just try to treat myself like a machine in a sense too and just kind of grind through it and yeah, get it done.
Yeah.
So there's no block and there's no boring time. There's no downtime. There's nothing like that. It's just get in and grind it. And it's like more so now than ever, especially since COVID too. I feel like, you know, it's been tough for everybody and it's shitty. I just doubled down on myself and I said, oh shit, all right, it's time to get better.
Right.
And now the world's reacting to working from home and all that kind of stuff. And so I just, yeah, but I'm rambling on, but that would be kind of a methodology that I use is multi projects. Don't put it all in one and collaborate with people that are better than you.
That's also another interesting thing, you know, like collaboration. I did an episode with Maciek Kuchara recently, and I know you collaborated awesome. With him on some stuff.
Love Maciek.
Yeah, Maciek's great. Do you think that collaborating with someone on something also forces you not to stall because you're someone else is responsible on the other end too?
Yeah, you can't, because you're responsible and you can't drop the ball. You know, Maciej and I have done many collaborations. We've started companies together, and like, so that's a perfect example. Like Maciej, I was really proud of him. He went out, he saw me doing all these shorts and pursuing my own just for fun. And I think he wanted a piece of that because it's fun to do. And it's really challenging. He started doing the Showtime thing and yeah. He was showing me, and I was like, just looking awesome. And he's a different type of mind where we approach things differently. We are problem solvers in different ways, mm-hmm. you know? And so when he asked for some help on the edit, and then I totally like tripped it apart and added a ton more stuff. And he was like, ah, crap. But I was like, trust me, this is what it's going to need to be. I know it's going to be a lot more work, but you got it. And I was just there to support him as he went.
Mm-hmm.
And that helped him with some matte paintings here and there, but it's completely his film.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a great exercise for him, I think, to understand his dimension, his ability, his sensibility. Like, because right now it's cool watching him. He's I can see his directorial voice coming through.
Mm-hmm.
And we talk all the time, all day long and stuff too. So, but when we collaborate, I feel like it's a nice combination, because he's very technical minded.
Okay.
Where he'll dive into a problem where I go like, ugh, like, dude, UVs, like, ugh, I don't want to deal with that. How can I hide this character so I don't do the UVs? You know, like, that's the way I'm thinking, yep. You know? So, which some would consider that's lazy, but at the same time, it's like, you find the solutions that you want. You know, that's one of our flaws as humans, but it's also a strength. We find our truths no matter what. We're trying to find our own truths no matter what. It's constantly trying to find it. So, but yeah.
Yeah. Well, first of all, that's an interesting thing that you type on. It's like, if you don't want to deal with UVs, it doesn't mean that you are lazy, I think. It also means that you may find solutions that can express what you need without the need for UVs.
Yeah. There was a project. I did it with my friend Chris Beyer. It was called None, and the goal was to make this little like poetic thing in 2 weeks.
Beautiful.
And so thanks. Well, the great thing is like I used Vitaly's kits, bash stuff, and then a bunch of models, and then I had this vision, and I was showing it to Chris, and Chris liked it, and we kind of worked through it, and then we just kind of, but it was 2 weeks. So I said, we can't go beyond 2 weeks. I have 2 weeks off. Let's just focus and get this done in 2 weeks. And so, but ever since then, it seems like every freaking project takes like a year, and it's like, serenity now, you know, right. Like, but yeah, that was an example of using style to overcome the technicality of things. So not a lot of character animation. Everything's dark.
Yeah.
So it and doesn't matter.
It's yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Volumetrics, and it's very noir. And it was like, it was a test to kind of, you know, for me, it was more or less like, how can we just capture what this, it was Ben Lucas Boyson did this incredible track. And I was like, how can we capture the essence of what this track feels like to me?
Mm-hmm.
And so it was, you know, and obviously Chris is involved too, but it was, I'm just saying it from my perspective, it was like, how can I distill down what this feels to me? So it's like, this shot feels right. And then birds coming through this and just the feeling of it. And that's what I mean by the essence of it. I'm not looking at any trend. I don't care about what other people are doing. I know there's like this whole thing now with crypto art, people keep going crazy about and trying to tell me to do it. I just don't care. Like if I don't care about it, I just don't have a fascination until I get shown something. I'm like, oh, okay, cool. But anyways, I digress. But that was a perfect example of avoiding UVing or all these pitfalls of CGI and then just trying to still distill it down. And oddly enough, that piece resonated with a lot of people. I didn't think it would go anywhere, but it went super far and got ripped off many times, and it's been quite a journey to watch it go and take wing, I guess. And I don't know, maybe I think it's an enigma that I'm trying to figure out, and I think a lot of people are trying to figure out. It's like, what about this did everybody connect with, and then this other thing which felt like I put so much more into it didn't. And it's just the rhythm. It's really crazy. Lightning in a bottle.
I actually think it's the restrictions, right? When creativity is born out of restrictions in a lot of ways. And I think what you did for yourself is I give myself 2 weeks, so I'm not going to be messing around with everything. So whatever I do has to be as impactful as possible and with the least amount of time and effort. And I think that's what did it. And it shows, honestly, you know?
I appreciate that. Yeah, it was an intense couple of weeks, but I learned a lot too. And I never look back at those projects. I never watch them either. So I just go, they're like little poems or little sketches. Like it's like a sketchbook. So,
right.
But it's cool. Yeah, who knows? Yeah.
Well,
I guess that's the mechanism.
Yeah. I mean, in the community, in the art community, in the graphic design and concept and design and art direction and all that stuff, obviously you're well respected and known for that. But you seem to try to give back to the community as much as possible as well and get yourself out there and do some things so that people can have the motivation and the tools to do things on their own. Is that sort of one of the things that inspired you to create your own podcast as well?
Yeah, you know, it's actually kind of interesting because I think we talked about doing a podcast, and then, you know, I kind of got I did the podcast with my buddy Andrew,
mm-hmm.
and we did it for 4 years or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Originally, it was just I felt so isolated and I wanted to talk, and then I realized there's a lot of people that wanted to hear these conversations. So then I kind of was doing it for other people and I wasn't doing it for myself. And so that's why I stopped doing it.
Mm-hmm.
I've had since COVID and before COVID and all that stuff, I kind of overdosed on being in public, to be honest.
Okay.
And I started seeing the therapist before all this, and I was trying to understand the mechanisms. As I said, I'm trying to discover who I am. What's moving me? Why am I doing these things?
You know?
One of those things is like seeking the approval of strangers. And I realized like, oh, I think I'm doing this too much. And I feel like it was almost unhealthy. It's like, you know, the scrolling, the liking and all this stuff, these mechanisms of these apps, it's not the app's problem. It's my personal problem. And I realized too, like people were saying like, oh, I have this person, I have that. And if, the thing with the podcast, it was never about anything other than me personally being interested in that art and wanting to know about the artist, you know, which I imagine is probably the same for you. It's like mm-hmm. we're curious brains and want a lot of that. So originally it was designed to be a mechanism for the industry at large to hear these conversations and have a bigger conversation beyond like a written interview. This is back before podcasts, I think, were really starting to take off.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously like guys like Joe Rogan and stuff were, I just wanted like a Joe Rogan experience for our little niche of an industry too. So, but I stopped doing it. It's just, I kind of just got fatigued on people being involved in my life, to be completely honest. And I just kind of shut everything down. I deleted Twitter. I unfollowed everybody on Instagram. Basically, I have a 10-minute allowance on Instagram, and that's the only app I use. I don't use Facebook. And I just shut it all off, and I only just talk with my close friends now. So it's kind of weird. It's been a very polar experience, but I just felt like there was so much noise, so many people wanting so many things from me personally. And it was very disruptive for my energy as a person. And it was getting in the way of me actually doing things. I was traveling around a lot, doing a lot of talks and stuff.
Yeah.
I love that. I love being able to meet people and communicate and share that bond and give people hugs and all that kind of stuff. That's awesome. Like, I love that. But it's also, I love being home. I love being with my family. I love being to work. And that takes a lot of time and a lot of intense focus too. So maybe it'll shift, but yeah, it kind of, I just had the kind of, not a mental breakdown. I just had a mental kind of like, okay, I'm giving too much. Too many people are involved in my life and I don't need it, you know? So I just want to be alone. Leave me alone.
I completely understand that. I mean, it can happen. I mean, you know, a couple of years ago, I was, you know, 150,000 miles of traveling every year. You know, it was ridiculous. It was so much.
That's a lot. Wow.
You know, and I was all over the place. And then COVID hit and I was like, well, I'm not going anywhere. And then suddenly I'm not going anywhere, but I'm around my family all the time.
Like, who are these people?
Well, the thing that's been great is that it's been okay. You know, I'm like, hey, you know what? Mm-hmm. I'm still getting my job done. I don't really need to go everywhere. I don't really need to do these things. I'm still, you know, somewhat active on social media, but I do try to temper it. I try to only talk about things I care about right now, or talk about things that are, or avoid as many of the things that I don't want to talk about. Right. So I don't talk about politics. Yeah. I'll talk about fly fishing instead, you know? So that would be a different. So
if that's, you want to be upset instantly, talk about politics online.
Yeah. So that's been really good. I think that's a really healthy thing to look at. I think that's really great. And thank you for sharing that story, because I think it's really good that people realize like sometimes seeking the, especially in art, you know, we are insecure people and we look constantly looking for approval, no matter how successful or good we are, we're always looking for approval. And that can be unhealthy sometimes.
it can be incredibly unhealthy, especially if you're seeking it from strangers and people that aren't vetted, you know.
Right.
It's important to vet the people that you share your work with. If you're just share it personally, and if you're just share it with the intention to get affirmation of your existence, like I said, when I'm really doing my art, it's just me expressing who I am. I was born as this a guy in America, but my art is who I am, and that's a whole different entity. So it's like I'm communicating in a different way. So if people go, oh, that sucks, or that doesn't make sense, or why didn't you blah, 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 it's hurtful internally for me, you know, because it's like, ah, shit, maybe they're right. Maybe everybody is lying to me, you know. And you can, for me, I know this is the same for a lot of people. It's like, you can get 100 accolades and amazing compliments. Mm-hmm. But if you're insecure, the one person that says one thing bad will diminish a lot of those others. And it'll kind of, and this is something I talk with Mateo a lot, because there's, for a long time, he was like, why do you get so upset about this stuff? And now I'm starting to see him get more upset. And that's because he's actually putting himself into his work more, which is great. Mm-hmm. But it leaves you to be vulnerable. And when you're vulnerable, it's really tough, because it's like, oh man, I'm trying my best here, you know? And I'm like, so yeah, it's a, you know, I think before COVID even, I was like, I had talks with my wife, said, I need to put my mental health to the forefront, because I felt like I was doing a lot of things for other people that I wasn't, I felt like I was just running, you know? And I think a lot of us were, especially pre-COVID, but like we were all traveling a lot, and we were all moving around a lot, and all doing a lot of things, and distracted, and like, you know, looking at what other people were doing and getting caught and enraptured in all these things, and everything was moving so fast. I personally, there's been a lot of things that I looked on the bright side for COVID, and that's one of the things, is like it slowed everything down.
Sure.
And allowed for people, myself included, to really reassess things, you know, and regather ourselves, you know. We're resilient beings for the most part.
Right.
So
before when we used to travel, I used to go to an event every year that I still miss. It's called THU, or Trojan Horse Was a Unicorn. I don't know if you heard.
I've heard it's awesome.
Yeah. It's really, really good. But that subject that you bring up of the, you know, the affirmation or that comes up all the time at THU, because everyone there is extraordinarily talented and extraordinarily insecure. It's like, it just goes hand in hand.
Isn't that weird? it's a kind of the price you pay for perfectionism, you know, and it's the price you pay for that is, it's kind of the cost. It's what feeds you, but it isn't. It's something I talk about too a lot with friends too. It's like when you're the drug and the drug dealer, it's a very dangerous situation, you know, because it's like you're the one giving yourself the drugs, but you're also the one that's making it. But then when you want other people to like be like to feed it, you're like, it's and because social media, every fucking, can I swear here?
Yes, you can.
Okay, cool. Sorry, I shouldn't be swearing.
Alberto Miago's been on, and so boy, Tom.
Oh, yeah.
You're good. Yeah, Tim Miller's been on three times, and trust me, it's fine.
Oh, okay, Tim. I love Tim. I love those both of those guys are awesome. But
yep.
Yes, but when you're on social media, everybody, as we all know, everybody has a place to say something, and some. I really wish people could be vetted on there. You know, it's like, I don't know if like this is a normal thing, but like, I don't think I've ever really written anything on YouTube ever. And the one time I did, it was probably like, this is so great, you are awesome. Like,
right.
Basically, I've never thought in my mind to be like, I'm going to sit here for a long time and write a big paragraph about why I don't like this. It's so weird to me, and I don't understand that way of thinking.
Right.
Why people would do that. If I don't like something, it's not for me to sit and argue about it. It's for me to just, well, I just don't like it.
Right.
Like, I'm not going to watch somebody go hurt animals. Like, I know in my heart, I hate that. Right. So I'm not going to sit there and talk about it. I don't know. I'm rambling
no,
on.
No,
when
no,
you
it
put
makes
yourself
sense.
Out there.
It makes sense. Yeah.
Okay. Well, but I just feed myself what I know what I want.
Right.
You know, I guess that's when you get older, you kind of understand who you are intimately. So, but online, when somebody, I mean, Machay and I talk about this, and all my friends, we talk about this, and we will share comments. So, and it's the weirdest thing, because it's like, hey, random stranger, we all see this,
right.
And then we know who you are and what you're doing. And then, so like, let's say I won't name a person, he'll send me a link and you go like, look at this guy's said, and I say, what is, and I read it and this is, what the hell is this guy talking about? We look at the person's work. It's atrocious, not to be a jerk, but it's like, hey, if we're talking about levels and you want to criticize, why are you doing that?
Right.
Like, and well, it's own insecurities. That made sense for me.
Most people who are are saying mean things are insecure.
Yes, it's sad, and I want to just give him a hug, but I don't have the compassion or empathy for it. I just want to, instead, I want to just punch him in the teeth. Yep. So
You know, one of the things that always cracks me up, I mean, I don't watch a lot of TV, but every now and then I'll see it on the YouTube feed, is the mean tweets stuff. That's really funny. I don't know if you've ever seen that. It's celebrities who reading tweets about people being mean to them. And they do it with such a sense of humor that it just completely diffuses the nature of that tweet, which is kind of a nice thing to do. But, you know, I remember at THU, there was a guy who's a friend of mine there, and he was telling me about this relationship. He was with this woman who was also an artist, and they would post something on Instagram or ArtStation or something like that. And if he got more likes or accolades or comments than she did, she would get angry and wouldn't talk to him. And that was such a competitive, horrible, toxic relationship.
Super toxic. Yeah. Yeah. You know, she needs a hug too.
Yeah.
It's unfortunate. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And to all, I mean, that's sad, but at the same time, it's like almost like she's doing it for all the right, wrong reasons. You know? And we've all been there. I think if we're to be honest with ourselves, we all, there's a little bit of competitiveness in us all. There's either a small spectrum or a good one. When I see somebody that's killing it, at first I go, ah, crap, I love it. And then other parts go, I hate you. But
it's a motivation for you to improve your own work, right?
Totally. And they're lifting the bar. So instead of going like, I hate you, it's like, I'll reach out and go, can we collaborate? Because I really want to know how you're doing what you do.
That's great.
And then I try to distill it that way. But when you're being competitive, I think it's great, but it's, you know, when we're emotionally and unintelligent, we're basically hitting triggers that we don't realize within ourselves. And then we get so emotional that we can't control ourselves.
Right.
And when you're in that realm of a tantrum, like a child, it's really complicated. And all you want is really just like a mother's embrace or a father's embrace, or, you know, somebody that's wiser, bigger, older than you to give you that nourishment of saying, hey, it's okay. And that's a bummer, you know, but it's kind of a common thing, you know. I have a couple of friends that are both creative in their relationship, and I found like that's very a very complicated situation, you know. So, but if you could do it, my hat's off to you. And that usually comes from a place of good communication and lots of love and understanding and being real about shit. Be like, hey, this is out of my control.
Right.
If you want to compete like that with me, then we can't work together because this is just weird, you know. So.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So much of it is we're just riding this wave of like randomness, and it's all based on like these algorithms that are beyond us, you know? So yeah,
for sure.
Coming to terms with it. Basically, I had an aha moment. I worked on this film called The Great Hack, and it was a pretty intimate situation where I put a lot of time into it, and it's this documentary, and it was awesome to work on it. And I love the team and crew, and the directors were awesome. And the team that I put together to put all the graphics together for it was awesome. But it was all about revealing really what's happening with all of our data and all of this information that we're exchanging online. And it was like very eye-opening because I don't pay attention to any of this stuff in the news. But ever since then, I was like, ooh, like Facebook, all these things. It's like, this is basically how it works. They get you on this platform. You agree to it. They share your data. That's how they make the money. And that's okay. You're part of it. It's a mechanism. We all know that now, but this is when I was starting. I learned about it a while ago and I was like, oh shit. Like, so when I saw it as a mechanism, I said, okay, cool. That's what it is. You know? Mm-hmm. So I realized it was a mental health issue.
Sure.
And I was doing it out of insecurity. So if I wasn't doing it out of like, I just want to share the work and that's it.
Right.
And engage, then that's it. Other than that, I don't care. So yeah, it's a tough one though, you know, cause you know, deep down we all want to be understood.
Yeah.
We all want to be loved and cared for.
For sure.
Yeah.
For sure. Yeah. I mean, I'm with you. I mean, honestly speaking, I've never done sort of my own thing, right? I've always worked with other people. That's what makes me, you know, that's what's going to improve what I do. And whenever I see great stuff, I'm like, I want to help that person. I want to do something with that person. Mm-hmm. What can I do to make that person, you know, do even more stuff? Or this is a cool idea. I have another idea. This person could really help me figure out what that idea is, or maybe this person be interested in that, you know? So it's always been fascinating to do that. Yeah.
Yeah. I, you know, it's interesting because you get criticism for that. oh, like you're just always collaborating, or you're not like, let's see your work. I've heard that from many friends.
Really?
Like, where's your work? And it's like, yeah, I mean, you know, nobody's ever pleased, you know, and people criticize me to the moon back, you know, so, and like they do anybody that's in the spotlight of doing something, you know, so, but that's an interesting byproduct of that. People like being like, oh, what exactly are you doing? Or how did you do this? Or what button did you push? And all that kind of stuff. There's, you know, it's, but I look at it the same way you do. It's like, when I see somebody brilliant, I just want to either A, encourage them with a, you know, like, okay, here's a quick example. I got into mountain biking recently and mm-hmm. like got really into it because it's, I don't just do things, I do them, you know, like 1000%. And it's a big problem. But so there's a, actually, ironically, near me, there's one of the fastest downhill mountain bikers in the world. Mm-hmm. His name is Aaron Gwynn, and he rides a lot of the same trails. And I found his YouTube videos, and this guy that is named Clay Porter, he's his director, he's really freaking awesome, nice videos of Aaron just shredding it. Mm-hmm. I would never know about these things unless I was really deep and followed into the YouTube chat rabbit hole of mountain biking and stuff just to understand it. Anyways, I find Clay, because I know Aaron's probably too hard to get a hold of online. So I see Clay Porter's profile. I reach out to him and I say, I love your work. If you ever want to collaborate, let me know. Because I think I could probably maybe add some kind of weird thing. I don't know. You know?
You don't know.
And we start talking. It's awesome. It's like, okay, that's cool.
Yeah.
You know? Like, you do great work. I love it. If you need help, I'm here to support it.
Yeah.
Or collaborate.
Yep.
You know? So, yeah.
it's funny you said that because people on my this podcast have heard it many times and they're going to just roll their eyes or laugh at me because I haven't had exactly the same experience with fly fishing. And I picked it up. I've always promised myself I was going to pick up fly fishing at some point, but because of COVID, I was like, well, now or never. And I sort of started really picking it up. And I found a guy, ironically through Facebook, that is one of the, you know, really premier fly fishing people in LA and understands saltwater fly fishing. And he's incredible. And he designs his own flies. He's got several patterns and stuff that are really great. And he took me under his wing. And he's, by the way, he's a graphic designer. So
interesting.
He has his own graphic design company and he does really beautiful work. And so he's teaching me how to tie flies. He's telling me casting lessons. I meet with him on the beach once a week and we go fishing for all kinds of stuff. And it's just been an incredible journey. And I was like, let's make some videos together. Let's do some content. Let's go out there. Let's join it. Let's make a Twitch of fly tying or whatever, you know? So, and so it's like, all right, Chris, slow down.
But it's like, I'm just having fun.
Yeah. But you know what? I believe to me, what's happened, like this is something, for example, I didn't know that podcasting would be something that I do that is creative or interesting to do. But suddenly being part of a community and bringing creativity like yourself to an audience has been something that I felt like, oh crap, this is something I can do. And this is fun. And I enjoy doing it. I love meeting people like you. I love it because it motivates me and it motivates everyone else. So I think it's important. It's been a fantastic journey and I completely get it. If you really get into something, get into it. It's fun.
There's no other way. And that's cool. Whether it be fly fishing or mountain biking or CGI or matte painting or concept art, whatever. We are all just trying to find our seeking our personal truths and, no matter what it is. And yeah, and I think the more varied your spectrum of interest, oftentimes that feeds the internal body of whatever your main intention is, you know? So like with mountain biking, I'm out in nature and I'm like ripping around and having fun and like getting oxygenated and like energized. And I'm sure with fly fishing, it gives you that peace and being in nature.
Yeah.
You know? Like nature is the big inspiration, obviously, too. So it's like as much as I can get out in nature, I got a big truck just to get out and rip it around and have fun. So yeah.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Yeah. Well, tell me a little, I mean, we're getting close to an hour, so I don't want to, you know, take up too much more of your time, but unless you have more time, that's fine. But
I can go another more.
But I'd love to know more about, you know, some of the upcoming projects. Is there stuff you can share about us where people can look at? I know you said you don't want to necessarily be very public, but at least people can look at your work, look some of the cool things that are coming up.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I mean, I'm constantly doing client work. I've just finished up a big project and more, and I have working on AI. Due to NDAs, I probably can't even talk about most of it, unfortunately, for the client side of things. On the personal side of things, nights and weekends kind of stuff. So Mache and I have a really cool project that we've been building. We're creating a whole world and we're kind of building this teaser for it, which is a lot of fun. So
yeah, he's been hinting at that. So I can't wait to see that. We're very excited about what's going on.
I'm actually doing some matte painting on it tonight.
Nice.
So it's really cool. And it's cool because Maciej's like really just fallen in love with like Unreal Engine and Blender, and he's teaching me stuff too. And he's kind of just went full force. So he's kind of leading that thing. And then I'm just behind supporting, and just kind of offering aid. So that's a good one right now. Super excited about that. My buddy Carlos, who I did the Evanetta project with, this car project that we did together, was a lot of fun.
Oh yeah.
I've been exercising my cinematography skills, and you can't really see it on here, but I have a bunch of stuff over here. But
right.
So I shot a bunch of stuff, and then we put together this really crazy. I don't even know how to explain it, but it's a fun project. If you're
well, it's an it looks like a 1970s Ferrari that you turn into an EV. It's just kind of beautiful. I've seen it. It's incredible.
Thank you. Awesome. Yeah, that's basically the it was a Ferrari concept designed by Pininfarina, who's a very renowned designer. It's
gorgeous car.
Super beautiful. It's one of the most beautiful cars I've ever seen. So yeah. When I saw it, I was like, this is crazy. And then I was like, let me take this incredible V12 engine out and then put a Tesla Model S, because my wife and I just got the new Tesla, and I was like, it's so fast. It's like hard to explain. I'm a big car person. So
yeah.
We have a Tesla.
I have a Model 3. Y, so. But
okay. Three. Yeah. Yeah. So we have the Y. Yeah. I mean, they're crazy.
Yeah.
We have the super crazy performance ones too. So that, and I have the Raptor too. So I have like the best of both worlds in the garage. It's a lot of fun. So, but I'm a big car person. So, but I thought, okay, we'll put the Tesla engine in there. So it was more or less a curiosity of like taking the old 70s stuff and then put 2020 stuff into it and then see that work. And, a friend of a friend of mine actually knows Elon, and I think he sent it to Elon. It's cool to see how far it's gone. So many people have seen it. A lot of directors that I know have watched it, and you know, like it's cool. I get good feedback on things, and like that was a really cool one. But Carlos and I, we really love cars. We love modifying them. We love building them, and it's kind of a thing we do in our pastime. So we're doing some cool stuff together where we're both kind of making our own cars and doing crazy renders of them. And I'm learning Corona render right now.
Oh, nice.
It's a really powerful render. I love the GI and everything, and I can also use my Mac, which is awesome. So all is great. So that's been an amazing
using Corona and C4D or
Yeah, C4D, yeah, which has been great. So because I use Redshift for a while, and then I back to Octane. I use Octane quite a bit still for like the paint release stuff that I do, and then but like I've been using Corona for realistic renders, and it's so far it's been amazing. It's like a more manageable V-Ray, if I were to say.
Okay.
Same GI results.
We have a new V-Ray for C4D, and I'd love to get your feedback on it. So we just came out last week or 2 weeks ago. So
yeah, I really wanted to try it. I saw that there was no nodes, and I was like, I need nodes. So I was
I'll find out. Let me know. If you want, I can get you whatever you need to try out.
I'd love to, because in my opinion, as it goes, as I see the work that I see from people, it all comes from the designer and the creative, right? Mm-hmm. But V-Ray is the creme de la creme, in my opinion, and in regards to GI, the versatility of it and all that stuff. The biggest problem is I didn't start out in the industry using industry tools. I guess I wouldn't say that. I don't want to criticize Cinema 4D. At the time, Cinema 4D was more like a motion graphics kind of thing.
Exactly.
Yeah. It wasn't like a Maya or a 3D Studio Max or anything like that. We just, at Prologue and the studios I had, was only Cinema 4D.
Mm-hmm.
So all these years later, when I try to go learn 3D Studio Max, I want to like die, because it's like, what's going on? How is this camera working? You know, it's like I have a lot of bad habits.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I actually started because Carlos influenced me, and I was like, dude, I'm going to learn V-Ray. I bought V-Ray and I bought Max, and I have a PC. I have two computers here too. And like, again, I'm not a technical person. So I was like, I guess I am, but I'm not. I hate this stuff. So, but anyways, so that's that thing. But really loving Corona. And I think Corona is a Chaos Group too, I guess.
Yeah, we have those.
It was a purchase. Yeah. So I personally love it. The light mix is great, all that kind of stuff. So there's that thing. And then my friend Francois, he goes by Friendly Robot. Him and I have done a lot of projects together. We did this little thing called Passage together. And we did these Star Wars paintings together recently, which were really fun, that my friend Anthony did narration for. Well, Francois made this really beautiful little short teaser to a world he was creating called Odyssey.
Mm-hmm.
And then him and I are doing a sequence of like 20 paintings right now. That's a sequence that I kind of pitched to him about this incident that happens in the world and stuff. So that's been really fun, but also very challenging because we have to set up all the rigs and build the scenes and all the characters have to be designed and all that kind of stuff. So lots of things to consider, but those are the main things. I'm trying to think. There's other stuff. I have other, like car projects and stuff and the other side kind of things.
That's great. What's the best place to follow your work?
The biggest one. Sorry. The last biggest one, actually, I don't know. I've missed this, but I've been working on it for like 3 years. It's called The Reign of Solace, and I've been directing it and working on it for like 3 years now.
Wow.
And it was originally going to be a short film. We went out and shot and filmed it, had actors, makeup, wardrobe, all the stuff, and a lot of effort, a decent amount of money. And I need retakes. I need reshoots basically to actually complete the vision that I need. And then COVID happened. So I'm like, it's out the door. So shifted and pivoted because I can. It's just a small production. It's just basically me and friends that are willing to help. Mm-hmm. But now we're making this like 2-minute, super epic, massive teaser trailer thing for the world. And it's like all new characters, new ships, new everything. I can't wait to share it. It's crazy because the amount of work that's behind this is just insane.
Wow.
So super excited about that. So it's like, if you're a Star Wars fan, like I grew up with it. Empire Strikes Back is one of my favorites. Yep. So I saw Mandalorian come out, a lot of kind of stuff, and all respect to them. I was just like, I don't know if that's the Star Wars I personally want to see. So I wanted to do my own.
Thank you.
And yeah. And so it was kind of like the idea I would pitch to a potential teammates and stuff was like, it's like a No Country for Old Men in Star Wars universe. So it was kind of like taking that kind of approach with it and kind of exploring some of the questions I always had, like, where does the Force come from? And like, you know, I'm more interested in the person than the caught in the between the two, you know? Right. So it's like, that's kind of the story I'm trying to tell. And the people that are caught in the wake of it is really the story I want to tell. So I don't know what's going to happen with it. You know, you can never control those things, but I'm putting a tremendous amount of effort into it and I have a lot of friends and people involved in putting it forth because I'm a stickler and a pixel fucker and I want every shot to be perfect and I want it to represent what it needs to. And it's tough. It's a very tough project. It's been really draining, to be honest. So,
You know, that's really great. I mean, I think that's really cool that you're doing that because the other thing that, you know, you seem to be able to do, and it's, you know, it was shown, what was this other show we call is None, right? It was called None, right? You did. Mm-hmm. And you basically, you know, you are able to make something look grandiose and big with such little effort, and, right? And so that's a really big deal and it's a skill that you need to do. So what that means is that just because you want to make something that's huge and big that shows a Star Wars, right, or whatever that is, or even Machix showing Showtime, right, it's like that's a really big looking amazing looking thing and it looks like $1 million, but it's, you know, just, you know, a couple guys working on it. So that is a really good skill that showcases that if you want to show your version of Star Wars, you still have that ability to do that.
You know, Disney's not knocking at my door. No. Nobody at Disney probably knows who I am. And I don't blame them. I'm not trying to go there either.
Right.
I actually, when I released Evanetta, I reached out to a bunch of directors that I've worked for. And I said, hey, I just want to show you this and maybe we can work on something together. And one of them replied and they said, oh, you should get a rep and this and that. I'm like, I don't even know what that is, you know, to be honest. Like, and I should, if I wanted to actually accelerate my career, I should probably put time into that. But between us, I kind of like to be in the trenches and I kind of like to bleed for the work and I kind of like to sit through it. And as impatient as I am, I realize that art just takes a lot of time and it takes a lot of, I mean, there's shots in Solace where we'll work on it for 3 months and I just throw it away because I'm like, I'm just not working. You know, it's like, and it's like, you got to kill them off because you only get one first impression. When this comes out, I really want it to have impact and I want it to be like, I want every Star Wars fan that aligns with the way I like Star Wars, which is growing up with it, to be like, I need to see this. Like, how can we get this? And hopefully somebody at Disney will see it and go like, who is this guy? What is this? We need to learn more. And then that would be really great to then do it and then hire on everybody that was a part of building the trailer and part of the project. Because the shooting of it, you know, I'm on the computer a lot. So anytime I get out to actually, you know, direct, it's really invigorating and it's fun. And I really feel like this is where I should be. You know, like, I don't know if it's the egotistical dictatorship inside of me, but it's like, having that energy and working with people and being able to be on a production basically is really great. But and that shoot was incredible. It was a 10-day shoot. We all lived in the same house and it was like very method. And it was like, we would cook dinner together and we would share meals. And it was like very, it's very family oriented. And that's how I want all my productions. I learned that from, I think Daniel Kane in France. He directed Blue Valentine, mm-hmm. and Place Beyond the Pines, which are both really outstanding films. But I learned from him that he actually lives and works with the actors, and it's very communal, and it's very close and very intimate. And I would talk every time after dinner, so I'm rambling. But these are fun little stories for anybody that's into directing. I like to be personal with everybody, and then I also like to ask for criticism from the people that actually need to tell me it. So I would talk to my actors and be like, so what can I do better now? And based on today, like what can I do for you to make you better? And working on things like that very openly so that I can hear them and understand, because I'm still green with acting with actors too. So I would tell them like, what's best for me? Do you want me to explain it? Or do you want me to just give you a general, like, here's the landscape, then you paint the bridge, connect it, you know? Thankfully I was working with two incredible actors, Tyler and Leanne. But that was really incredible. It's a bummer that the trailer is just, it just has moments of them. They're incredible acting moments, but there's no dialogue, unfortunately. Right. So I'm using a VO to kind of, we hired this really great voice actress to do the narration behind it. So when you watch it, you get the basic premise of what's happening in the world, basically. But yeah, I can't wait to actually work with the actual production and people that have money. And my biggest missing link is like a really good producer that has connections to money. And that's most of our problems, you know, too. So.
Sure. Absolutely.
But eventually when that happens, it'll be good. I think I'll start to really rip.
So, yeah. I mean, if you know, if you think the politics are bad on social media, you can imagine what they are in Hollywood.
Oh, yeah. I'm very familiar with that. Yeah. That's why I stay away from it, because it's toxic.
Yeah, I know. I think you're doing first of all, you're doing a really great job in terms of what you need to do and in terms of expressing what you do. I think one of the reasons you're successful at and you get people's attention is that you have managed to do what you wanted to do by avoiding as much of that as possible. Yeah. So that's really good. Yeah. And it's healthy.
It's like Game of Thrones out there.
Yep. Yep. Yeah, absolutely. And so, you know, we're working beyond the wall at this point. So it's nice to be sort of on the other side.
A lot of Joffreys everywhere.
Yeah. Exactly. So I think this is a really good thing, and I love the fact that, you know, what you're doing, and I think it'd be great. You know, I'm not holding my breath that Disney will actually listen to its fans. They don't seem to be doing a very good job of that. Or sometimes they listen too much to the fans, and all they do is fan service.
Serenity Now, Solo movie. Okay, I said that.
Yeah. So yeah.
Beautiful movie.
Just give me Chewbacca on a Millennium Falcon, and I'll be happy.
Yeah, I don't need to know about where he got his gun and what belt size he wears and all this stuff. No, so, I mean, it's easy to criticize those movies. I can't believe even a film gets made.
Yeah, I know. Especially a movie being scale. Made is incredible in itself. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. At that scale too, it's just like, it's like moving chaos. It's crazy. If you know anything about movie making, even a bad movie, you're just like, I can't believe it got made. That's amazing. Like,
you know what we got to do? Yeah.
I just watched a film that I recommend to everybody too that I thought was quite brilliant, and it's a unique film. If you like weird films and unique films, from the same writer creator of Let the Right One In, which I love.
Yeah.
He wrote another story called Border, which got adapted.
Is it Swedish as well?
Swedish film. Yeah. Yeah. It's fucking awesome. I watched it the other day. I was like, first time in a while, I felt like I was really just watching a movie. It's hard because I'm always not criticizing, I'm analyzing, you know, like how did that shot work? But this one, I just kind of fell into the character and I fell into the story and I was like, wow, I'm watching a movie. This is so great. And it's a good one. It's very unique. It's very weird precursor. And if you don't like weird stuff, I would maybe stay away from it. But I fully support interesting, unique new cinema. And I felt like that was one of the
That's great.
Ones I really enjoy. Yeah,
that's great. Well, really well, Ash, I can tell, like, you know, you and I at some point are going to need to hang out, because I have a very, very similar mindset as you. I get very excited. I have another podcast that I run called Martini Giant, which is just me and my two buddies, and they're both filmmakers, and all we do is talk about our passion for movies, and minimum of 3 hours per episode. So,
oh, that's good. Yeah, it's a Joe Rogan length. Yeah,
yeah. And so we just have a great time, and so we had long episodes about Star Wars as well. And so it'd be fun. I'd love to actually have you on if you have an idea of a movie. I'll hit you up for that maybe at some point.
Yeah, I love a lot of movies.
So I mean, if you want that Swedish film, if you want to talk about that Swedish film, we could probably do that.
Oh yeah, I mean, yeah. There's, you know, what's weird for me is like I tend to watch the same movies over and over, just because I constantly, if I like something, I kind of just wear it out basically. But yep. But yeah, the Borders film was interesting. I don't know if I'm as knowledgeable about it as say like Star Wars or something, or like
you don't
Blade
have
Runner
to be.
Or Alien. Okay, cool. Yeah, I mean, yeah, that's good.
You don't have to be.
We did on the collective, my friend Gavin and I, we did a couple walkthroughs of commentary of our own commentary through these movies.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them was like, I think we did Alien or Aliens. And but it was fun because we know, because we studied it, it's our study basically. We know so much, and as we're going through, like, you see that little thing right there, that person, like it's kind of funny. I don't know if that's like probably too nerdy, but yeah, I mean, talking about film is a great thing to do.
Yeah,
it's also distracting too. I mean, I love all Paul Thomas Anderson's films too. Not all of them, but like he's a supreme being, Phantom sure. Thread and all that stuff. So. Yeah, but yeah, any of that stuff, that I'd be honored. That'd be fun. That'd be cool.
Yeah, yeah, I'll share some stuff with you. It's now that I have your your email. I'll share some stuff that was fun. But I would love to hear more of your stuff you're doing. Love to see more of the stuff you guys are doing with Matchek. And you know, please share it. And you know, we're gonna do a little story on the not a little story a story on your on the EV car project as well. So that would be really awesome. Cool to have that. So.
Well, I appreciate you taking the time and the interest, you know.
Oh, absolutely. Like I said, I'm like you. It's like I see great work and I just want to sort of like get it out there and see some really cool stuff and let people hear more about it and get inspired. You know,
we're blessed to have you doing that. That's
sure.
We're thankful for you for doing that. It takes a lot of effort. So cheers to you and your team.
Yeah. So, thanks a lot, man. So listen, just a little warning before we say goodbye, please don't hang up yet because it needs to upload the video and audio as we go. So I'm just going to do that. Yeah. But we'll put on the podcast page, we'll obviously put all the links to all your work and we can put some videos up there as well so people can check it out. Cool. We'll have a show page or an episode page for that. So Kristen will hit you up for all the links and all that information. This will probably come out in about 3-4 weeks or something like that.
Sweet.
But yeah, thanks so much for doing this. I really appreciate it, Ash.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Yeah. It's like, I haven't done a podcast in a long time. I kind of avoided them for a while too. So this is the first one I think I've done in like a year or so. So,
I'm honored. I'm really, really honored. Thank you so much for doing that.
Well, I appreciate you, you know, doing it and thinking of me and your kind words. Very, very kind. So, yeah.
Thanks, man.
Appreciate it. Yeah. Thank you.